Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, engineering and producing our program. Tom, it's June 1st, Thursday, the 2023, the year 2023. June 1st, where we probably won't hit 90 degrees. And you said something yesterday that might be the first time a June high.
If we don't hit 90, it'll be the coolest high for a June in about 32 years, is my understanding.
Boy, I could take that. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we had a few days like that?
So for the last 32 years, on June 1st, the temperature apparently has been 90 or above every time.
Well, let's see. I've been in town now 35 years, so yeah, that sounds...
Makes sense to me.
Sounds about right. Hello, everybody. We are off and running here now, our Thursday edition of the Buckmaster Show, as we roll out a new month, the hurricane season starting. People in southern Arizona going, well, who cares? That's all about the Caribbean Basin. No, it's the Eastern Pacific as well, and a lot of our weather as we get into the hurricane season, into July and August, can be very much triggered. Our rains from hurricanes in the Eastern Pacific that move up along the Baja. So we'll be keeping an eye on that this summer. We're in our 13th year broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, the radio station 1030 KVOI, Tucson source for news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, which is buckmastershow.com. We piggyback the live feed from KVOI.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line for his monthly visit with us. Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie, Republican District Number 4, the lone Republican on the 5-member board of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. Supervisor Christie, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. Always great to be on your show. And you know, just as a bit of information, you were talking about weather and rain and things of this nature. I just wanted to let you know that up on Mount Lemmon, the year-to-date precipitation is 10 inches.
What?
And, 10 inches, and May alone had 1.5 inches of rain. And according to the United States Forest Service, there will be no stage 2 fire restrictions this season. But of course, we urge everybody to be very careful when they go up there. But this rain has given us a lot of beneficial results, and fire danger seems to be not in the, pardon the pun, not in the front burner. So the rain has been good.
Well, you know, I have kind of mixed feelings about when I hear about no fire restrictions. I just think it might be tempting fate, but we do have to be very vigilant. But that is a very productive 5-month picture year to date. When you're talking about 10 inches, that's really good news, Steve Christie.
Yeah. But it's it doesn't say no restrictions. Of course, it's no stage 2 restrictions, which means an enhanced vigilance. But we've always, as you say, we've always got to be very careful, very vigilant, and very sensitive to fire dangers, no matter what the rainfall is up on the mountain.
You know, Steve Christie, I was just reflecting for a moment when I did the introduction, the 5-member board of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. You're out and about talking to people. Have you? I would think that your answer to this is it's very much the case that when you tell people you are the Pima County Supervisor from District 5, there's a considerable amount of folks that you meet who have no idea what you know where I'm going with this, that have no idea what the Board of Supervisors does.
No, it's very true. And sometimes they don't, when I tell them that I'm a member of the Board of Supervisors, a county supervisor, they'll say sometimes, which county? I know exactly what you're saying, and then yes, it is true, and I do get that quite a bit. What do you do, Supervisor Christie, as a supervisor?
Yeah, well, you know, I think that folks that don't follow like what we do here in news and talk, they think that Tucson's mayor, Regina Romero, is basically the head of the whole like Southern Arizona.
Well, certainly I would disagree with that assumption, and certainly I would be rather in a position where I would say that's a good thing that is not the case, because we do have a county government, and the city of Tucson, just like any other jurisdiction, has its own form of government as well, just like Oro Valley and Marana and Sahuarita. They all have town councils or councils with elected officials that have other names. It's either the city of or the village of or the town of. So
yeah,
everything basically is overseen by Pima County at the end of the day.
Yeah, and Pima County has a lot of, there's a lot of money at stake. This new budget, let me see here. We're at a close to $1.8 billion budget, was tentatively approved while I was out of the country on vacation. It's about $172 million less than the current fiscal year budget. It does set the combined county property tax rate. Looks like it's maybe 0.75% increase. You did not vote for the tentative adoption. You and Supervisor Sharon Bronson said no to this budget package. What was your main opposition, Steve Christie?
Well, there's a number of them. First of all, it's not revenue neutral in the sense that the taxation amount, the percentage of primary property tax, did not go down enough. So that was my first objection. Of course, we're also dealing with a lot less COVID money, and that's going to have a real impact on a lot of programs that were instituted by the board, most of them not with my voting in the affirmative. So I think we have to be very careful now that we've been kind of slopping at the trough of federal money. Now that's disappearing, and we're going to have to be very judicious as to how we look at the budget, look at our expenses and look at our revenue and determine which way we want to go. We always have the threat of a recession looming on us as well. So I'm very concerned about a lot of the issues that are going to be instituted or are trying to be instituted. Are we going to get the adequate funding for them? On the Board of Supervisors equation, you know, the taxes, the rates have been reduced, but I don't think they've been reduced enough. And when we are going to be experiencing increased assessments and assessed values, and that means property tax bills are going to go up. We did, as you pointed out, on the 16th, set the budget cap, but that again was 3-2 with Supervisor Bronson and I voting against it. And then on June 20th, we have the final approval as well. So I have priorities, just like my colleagues have priorities. Of course, my main interest is and has always been to fix the roads, and I'm concerned about the road repair plan. In 2019, we made a promise to the community that every road in unincorporated Pima County would be repaired within 10 years. And now there appears that because of some funding allocations in upfront years in those 10 years that take away from future years, that there won't be funding in several years at the second half of those 10 years. And there also are some changes as to how they rate the road conditions, the pavement indexes. There's also some kind of a rather cloudy explanation of what roads will be fixed when and where or if at all. And it's very troubling that the budget doesn't reflect, in my mind, the necessity that we have to keep our promise to the citizens and taxpayers of Pima County that we made a promise to fix those roads within 10 years. And that, to me, has not been addressed adequately in the budget, and I'm going to still be pushing for that in the upcoming meetings before we finalize the budget.
Well, you had brought this up about the road repairs in our last visit, and then the next day, I think it was, that it would have been the first Friday, I think, in May, that we had Jan Lesher on the show. And I asked her about this, and she said, don't worry, we're going to keep our promises. But you want to see that in the budget somehow. Is that correct?
I definitely want to do that, because at some particular point, there's going to be roughly $14 million out of that budget spent for employee raises, Pima County employee raises. We haven't seen where these raises are going to go, who they're going to be receiving, who is going to be receiving these raises, how much the raises per individual are going to be. But $14 million, that really is not divulged as to how that will be allocated to the employees. That's very concerning, and that's $14 million that I feel should be going to the road plan, road repair plan. And I even asked at the last board meeting that we delay implementing those raises for a year and redirect those funds into the road repair plan to make sure that we have adequate funding to fix our roads. And consequently, I'm still looking at the budget for other funds to redirect into road repair as well. So, this is, as always, has been a major and primary concern of mine, and I'm concerned that for whatever reason, due to inflation or reallocation of funds or costs of goods and services when it comes to road repair, I am concerned that we will not be keeping our promise that we made in 2019.
We're speaking with Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie about these pay raises. This is something that goes back to an outside firm that was brought in to kind of look at kind of the adjustments that were needed in some departments. I think that was back in 2021, and now they've made their report. And you suggested, could we put this off for 12 months? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. That was by CBIZ, a consulting firm that did an analysis, which I've yet to see as to how it's going to be broken down. And it's due to go into the budget in the upcoming year. And, you know, we've had automatic pay increases for our employees over the last 5 or 6 years, I think every other year or every couple of years, some as much as 5%. So I feel, done our fair share to keep the workforce in a good pay situation. Of course, we don't ever want to compete with the private sector. That's not government's role. But we do want to provide security for our Pima County employees, and also to incite and incentivize folks to take a look at Pima County as an employment opportunity. But we have had raises in the past several years, and now we're talking about a very substantial raise of $14 million across, I'm assuming, across the board. These are significant amounts of money, or this is a significant amount of money that I feel best at this point go back to road repair. So
what about
I'll
sheriff?
Be watching that very closely.
Excuse me, Steve. Sheriff's deputies, yep. They are going to get some money, and there is money that's going to, I think it's $500,000 to pay for that study that's ongoing about the jail.
Yeah, that was a suggestion on the Blue Ribbon panel I'm sure you're referring to.
Yes.
I haven't really taken the time to digest all of the suggestions, but they are mere suggestions at this point. But definitely, if anybody needs raises, it certainly are law enforcement and deputies. But this particular pay raise that they're talking about, $14 million, that goes across all employees as far as I know, and I want to make sure I see them.
All right, we're going to pause right here. More with Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie. We'll be right back. It's the Buckmaster Show on a Thursday afternoon. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006. And the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, 3384 East River Road, by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Everything you need for the garden and their sister business. Zocalo Village has some beautiful garden accessories and some wonderful furniture, much of it handcrafted from Latin America, Europe. Their website, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com in their 52nd year of business, and they are open daily. We love Green Things. We love all the wonderful sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Go back now to the live line and Pima County Supervisor Republican Steve Christie, the lone Republican on the five-member Pima County Board of Supervisors. Pima County, the City of Tucson, and Casas Alitas are working together, Supervisor Christie, as you know, to provide aid and shelter to a growing number of migrants who have been coming to Pima County since the end of Title 42, which ended last month, about, I think it was the first couple of weeks in May. We were close, according to Mark Evans, the Pima County communications spokesman. We were close to street releases of migrants, but things are, I guess, settling down a little bit, but still over capacity at the two Casas Alitas shelters.
Yeah, and prior to the lifting of Title 42, it was, I think, from my standpoint, very gratifying to finally hear the Pima County administration and all the deputy directors and deputy administrators all in unison finally admit that we have a crisis with asylum seeking. And that crisis is a lack of capacity to handle this very large influx of those seeking asylum. And back in, I think it was 2019 or 2020, I wrote an op-ed that had the headlines that Pima County taxpayers should not be in the asylum seeking business. And I was, you know, roundly criticized by my colleagues and others for saying that. And as it turns out, that clarion call way back then is proving itself to be coming to fruition, that we did have a crisis. We do have a crisis, and I think we will continue to have a crisis. And I felt somewhat vindicated that finally folks were coming to the fact of reality that what we need to do is to divest ourselves from federal money for asylum seekers. And once you start drinking that cup of federal funding, you become poisoned and you become dependent on it. It's kind of like an addiction. And we have an overcapacity situation in the Casa Salinas facilities, like you pointed out. But what we need to do is to tell the federal government we are not going to be an asylum-seeking processing center in Pima County. We are not going to accept any more asylum seekers, and we are not going to accept any more funding. And once we do that, we can stop this crisis from developing into a bigger crisis. And it's going to be up to the federal government to have to deal with the situation if Pima County doesn't accept money and we don't accept asylum seekers. And it's coming very clearly that that migrants are not asylum seekers. And I think that's one of the biggest issues we have. Certainly, we want to look at our immigration system in a matter of fairness, and does it meet the requirements of asylum when someone comes in? Coming into this country to become better off economically are not grounds for seeking asylum. And you talk to anybody who has any on the ground knowledge of the border crisis and the immigration crisis, and you'll find that the overwhelmingly vast majority of those coming into this country, either through legal or illegal means or any other kind of method, will tell you that the reason why they're here or the reason why they want to come here is to get a better life, to make more money, to have a better life, a better lifestyle, and for their families, and that's all understandable. But that is not the legitimate way to seek asylum. It is not grounds for asylum. Well, and now we're seeing the issues of that, and it's really in a very bad, very tenuous fashion that we're dealing with this, and we need to stop.
$45 million from the federal government has been received so far, according to Mark Evans, the Pima County spokesperson. Additional $19 million is coming in. But the sustainability of this, the key is the federal funding. But what I'm hearing you say is, let's stop. No more federal funding and Pima County. What would happen to these people if that happened?
That would hopefully there will be some situation at the border that would prevent more people from coming in. There needs to be a much more stringent facility installed, either legal or otherwise, that can hold people or prevent them from coming in. This is, I think, the biggest crisis we have. Is we have Casa Salinas is handling upwards between 1,300 to 1,800 people a day. It was the last one the report I saw. That, as you say, is not sustainable. And I point out that when I had my business, my dealership, or any business, and I'm sitting in my office and I look out on the street and I see all sorts of folks without jobs, and I decide, you know what, I'm going to give everybody a job. I'm going to tell them, just come into my business, sign up on the payroll, I'll pay you salaries, your benefits, your retirement, everything. Just come on in. And doesn't matter. You have family that you have with you. Well, we'll put them on the payroll too. How long do you think my business would last? And this is the issues that we're facing now.
All right, before we let you go, getting back to that tentative budget, and I only have a few seconds, you are not at all happy with this tentative budget, and you still want to see some changes. Is that characterizing what you're thinking?
Yes, I would agree with that characterization. And, of course, as I've stated time and time again, and I will continue to state that we made promises to the taxpayers of Pima County about our roads, and I was first elected based on my pledge to just fix the roads. And I look at that as our priority as a county, as elected officials, that we must meet the needs of our infrastructure. And the number one problem with our infrastructure is the condition of our roads. And I have to remind my colleagues that the people that are paying for our salaries and for all the 7,200 employees of Pima County salaries have been doing so for years, and they have lousy roads in front of their house. And that's not right. That's not fair. And that needs to be addressed. And the only way to do that is to continue our 10-year plan to fix every road in unincorporated Pima County.
All right. Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie, who is about to tell us that he loves being a supervisor.
I was about to say that, but also you didn't use your term supervisorial.
Not today. You used it. Thank you. All right. Gotta go. Have a great day.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Thursday edition, as we get into a new month. It's June 1st, Tomorrow on our Friday Focus interview, Fred Duvall joins us. Fred is the chairman-elect of the Arizona Board of Regents. Very important job. The Board of Regents over three, not one, but three universities. UA, ASU, and NAU. That's tomorrow at noon. Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, always makes a delightful getaway this time of year, especially. We like to talk about the 10-degree difference because of the elevation in Silver City. Look at the high in Tucson, then you look at the high in Silver City, and it's usually at least 10 degrees cooler. It's 71 degrees at midday in Silver, so that's certainly within about 10 degrees cooler than Tucson. Only a three-hour drive over to a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment. Check out southwestnewmexico.org for what to do, where to stay, and some great places to dine as well. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. On the live line from his observatory in Vail, Arizona, one of the most successful comet discoverers in history, the former science editor of Parade Magazine, Dr. David Levy, our contributor on science. Dr. Levy, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm okay. I'm doing all right. How about you, Bill?
Doing real well. You know, I keep hearing about this debate. It's been going on for years about Pluto, planet or not. When are we going to set this aside and make a definitive decision?
I kind of don't think we ever will. it was kind of an interesting story because the way it was done was so off-handed and so rough-handed, it was not really fair for me, and they've never allowed for any discussion since then. There was what was called the Great Pluto Debate, but that didn't get anywhere. But when I think about Pluto, I think of it as a planet, because it's round and it's spherical, and it smells like a planet, eats like a planet, acts like a planet. Therefore, it's a planet, Bill.
There you go. What about this return to the moon? Are you happy about that?
Oh, of course I'm happy about it, but it's not the same. I remember being at a summer camp, Camp Minnow Brook in Lake Placid. And I was there, and we had all watched the landing that morning. And at the dinner table, I went up to the head counselor, who had just announced an evening activity of free play and stuff. And I went up to him and I said, "Don't you think we should go back to the auditorium and watch the moonwalk?" And he barked back at me and he said, "Go back to your table. It's none of your business." I believe that the owner of the camp overheard the conversation, because about 30 seconds later, he called for everybody's attention. He said, "Evening program canceled. After dinner, we are all going to go to the auditorium. And what the hell else are we going to do? We are going to watch a change in history tonight as the first moonwalk takes place." And they had some kids in that auditorium that night that were 7 years old. Mm. And when Neil Armstrong began to walk down the ladder, it was silent in the auditorium. And I will never forget that. And I cannot believe the second try is going to match up to what happened that unforgettable night.
No, I don't think so. It'd be pretty hard to beat that moment.
Yeah.
We know you love poetry, and you usually give us a quote of the month, but the poem this month is one that I understand you wrote yourself, Dr. David Levy.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is, and I'd like to share it with you now.
Go ahead.
It is an elegy called "Wendy Amongst the Stars." "Each day I awake, today is the day. I look towards her. She is not there. My heart goes on, but do I care with anything lit in some ray? The night is dark as coal. The sky is stars from west to east, from south to north, just like a feast, a pill, heaven sent to calm my soul. A telescope stands and waits for my eye at us, just one brief look, forward through space like an open book, and backward through time, open wide escape. I see a star. Why is it there? Lapis philosophorum, philosopher's stone that strikes the night. It ushers me home as part of a pattern to learn, I dare. But reason not. General relativity. Gravity's geometry, the speck of thought. No speck of thought. No idea strikes. No wisdom. No system bought. A space-time crash to save his dignity. She is a part of me, a beam of light amongst the stars. In the sky, a plant. Not there, but there. Not there, but there. To say my soul enchant from grief to joy all through the night.
Very nice. And that, of course, dedicated to your late wife, Wendy Levy, who we all miss. We miss Wendy a lot. And I know it's been a very difficult road for you, but nice poem, very heartfelt. And I'm glad you shared it with our listeners, David.
Well, I wanted to do that this month.
Yeah, thank you very much. We certainly do share in missing Wendy. David Levy, we'll talk to you next month. Thanks, Dr. Levy.
Okay, you take care.
Okay. The Buckmaster Show. Buckmaster rolling on a Thursday. We've got the consular in the house, Attorney Don Luce, joining us right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane in North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It's Buckmaster, Mr. Bill Buckmaster, with you in studio along with our friend, Attorney Don Luce. Mr. Luce of the Luce Law Group with offices in Tucson and Phoenix. Don Luce is the Buckmaster Show legal contributor. We look forward to his monthly visits. Never a shortage of legal topics in the state of Arizona. And Don is the author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. I recommend both books. And they're doing so well that they went into a second printing. Don, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. Thanks.
Always a pleasure to see you. Interesting story about Carrie Lake, who continues her effort to somehow find kind of an opening that would overturn an election. As time goes by, she's still hanging in there with this, but what have the courts said about her latest bids to overturn the 2022 gubernatorial election?
Okay, well, I think everyone knows that that was unsuccessful. Mm-hmm. She lost. The question that was most recently presented to the court, however, is should she pay attorney's fees to the party that won? And Peter Thompson, who is the Superior Court judge assigned to that case, sort of found in Lake's favor on that limited issue, saying that Lake failed to provide evidence of misconduct, but that in the way that the verified signatures on the early ballots were, but that her action was not without substantial justification. Hmm. And that's important because we have a statute in Arizona that requires every lawsuit to have substantial justification at its root. So if you file a lawsuit and you have evidence to support your claims, that's good. And the statute would be inapplicable. If you filed a lawsuit, however, without any factual basis whatsoever or any law on your side to support your claims, then the court could order you to pay the other party's attorney's fees. Carrie Lake lost. The court found that the evidence did not support her claims, but refused to punish her or her attorneys under this statute, and said that there was at least evidence consistent with the claims that she was making, so therefore her lawsuit was not brought without substantial justification. Compare this, however, to sort of a companion lawsuit that was brought by Mark Fincham, who was the unsuccessful candidate for Secretary of State. The court in that case... Both Maricopa County judges, different judges, however.
Different judges.
The judge in the Fincham case did find that Fincham's lawsuit was brought without substantial justification, and in fact specifically said that Fincham challenged the election loss despite knowing that his claims regarding misconduct and procedural irregularities were insufficient under the law to sustain the contest. So with that finding, the judge in the Fincham case, again, different judge than the judge in the Lake case, the judge in the Fincham case awarded the prevailing party, Adrian Fontes, $40,565 in legal fees and costs, right? And imposed a separate penalty against Fincham's lawyer.
Wow.
Of $7,400 for filing the lawsuit that she had found to be groundless and not brought in good faith. So both the litigant, Mark Fincham in this case, and his attorney were sanctioned by the court,
yes,
because their lawsuits were not brought in good faith, essentially.
You know, this just feels like there's a subjective kind of element to this, and you gotta wonder if the Fincham case had maybe gone to Judge Peter Thompson in Maricopa County Superior Court, whether there would have been a different outcome.
Yeah, you do as a Superior Court judge, you do have discretion under 12349, which is the statute that we've been talking about, to essentially sanction or punish the losing side if you find that it was groundless and not brought, you know, in good faith. Now, interestingly, Mr. Fincham, in a earlier statement, said that the judge was punishing him for asserting his First Amendment protections. And he went on to make other disparaging remarks about the judge and the decision that was made against him. So the takeaway is, depending on your judge, if your losing claim is viewed to have been groundless or brought without substantial justification, you as a litigant and your attorney who's representing you in that court may get hit with sanctions.
Boy, there are a lot of gray areas in the law.
Well, there are a lot of statutes that give the judges the authority to exercise their discretion, and this is one of them.
Very interesting stuff. It has been a couple of sessions that we have not talked about legalized marijuana, Don Luce. Let's talk about it now. State Court of Appeals has opened the door for people convicted of selling small amounts of marijuana in Arizona to now qualify to have their records expunged. And we've been talking a lot over the last months about this effort to expunge records that have to do with marijuana convictions.
Yes. In 2020, the voters of Arizona passed Prop 207. And
yes.
In part of Prop 207, in addition to legalizing marijuana for recreational use, also provided that people who had been convicted previously of possession of marijuana up to 2.5 ounces were eligible to have their convictions essentially expunged, right? Sealed, you know, hidden from public view and scrutiny. So this case, the one that we're talking about now, arose out of an arrest in 2014. So, you know, that would have been 8 years, six years before Prop 207
long
was passed.
Long before. Sure.
And the defendant in that case was not charged with simple possession, but rather possession of a drug for sale, which is a more serious offense.
Yes.
So the amount that the defendant had in his possession was 2/3 of an ounce, which is considerably less than the 2.5 ounces that Prop 207 allows, right? So he had a small amount in his possession, but he was arrested for possession of a drug for sale, and he pled guilty to a lesser charge of solicitation to commit possession. So he went back to court, and with the support of the Maricopa County Attorney's Office, who had prosecuted him in the original case, filed a petition to have his conviction expunged, erased, sealed. The judge refused. The Superior Court judge said, no, that's not what the proposition means. What the proposition means is, if it's simple possession, you're eligible. This case involved essentially possession with intent to sell. So therefore, I'm not going to grant the petition. The really interesting thing is that the prosecutor was on board with the petition.
Yes.
And the judge refused. So the defendant appealed the judge's ruling to the Court of Appeals in Phoenix, which is Division I, arguing that Prop 207 is broader than what the trial court interpreted it to be. And the Arizona Prosecuting Attorney's Advisory Council stepped in, as they have a legal right to do, and they filed a brief saying, no, if you intend to sell, then you're outside the scope of 207. The Court of Appeals disagreed, disagreed with the trial court, said the trial court erred in not granting the petition to expunge his conviction, and sent it back with instructions to the trial court to expunge the conviction. So what this does, what this case does, is it makes clear that defendants who were convicted prior to 207, 2020, 2.5 ounces or less, right, are eligible to have their convictions expunged, whether it was for mere possession or some other more serious charge, as long as the amount was up to but not more than 2.5 ounces.
It really opens the door, doesn't it?
Oh, my God. There are potentially, you know, by some estimates, up to 500,000 people who have convictions on their record for either possessing or possessing with intent to sell a small amount that may be eligible now to have those convictions expunged.
That's going to be a really interesting one to watch. One more I'd like to get into. Arizona's Attorney General, Chris Mays, suing firms over what are these are called forever chemicals. The Wall Street Journal, I think it's front page story today about these forever chemicals. They're forever. What are they?
Okay, so there is a class of chemicals known as PFAS. And essentially, these chemicals don't break down, right? But the problem with these chemicals, as I understand it, is they're fairly water soluble. So they can easily contaminate a water source. And the other problem with these chemicals is they were widely used in the manufacture of fire retardant foam. So if you think about places like Davis-Monthon, where this foam is used on a regular basis, these chemicals are essentially sticking around and finding their way into the water supply. So the lawsuit that the Arizona Attorney General filed on Friday, last Friday, May 26, is against some of the manufacturers of these forever chemicals saying you were negligent in the design, manufacturing, and marketing and sale of these products, and therefore you are liable to the state of Arizona for the cost of remediation. Well, this is a multi-million dollar claim. But the interesting thing is, it's only one of about 4,000 lawsuits that have been brought nationwide against the manufacturers of these forever chemicals. And each of these claims involves, generally speaking, very large dollar amounts. So you potentially have liability on the part of manufacturers like 3M or DuPont of billions of dollars relating to these various claims. And the claim that is being asserted by the Arizona Attorney General is not on behalf of individuals who have been injured, but rather on behalf of the state, which has remediation expenses. Individuals who are exposed to PFAS may also bring lawsuits in their individual capacity for the injuries that they've sustained. So if you think about the magnitude of this litigation, it's massive. Yeah. These are huge dollar amounts.
Yes. You can imagine what the attorneys for DuPont are going through right now.
Well, it's
and 3M, there's a, but as you say, there's what 4,000 different lawsuits.
There are thousands of lawsuits nationwide over these forever chemicals, and these lawsuits are not going to go away. I just wonder though what financial impact they may actually have on the manufacturers once everything shakes out.
All right, Don Luce, the author of Arizona Laws 101, a handbook for non-lawyers and estate planning in Arizona, what you need to know. Don's books, both in second printings. Don, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, on behalf of Mr. Luce and Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show, Bill Buckmaster saying, we'll be with you in about 23 hours. We've got the chair-elect of the Arizona Board of Regents, Fred Duvall, joins us for our Friday Focus interview talking about the university system in Arizona. That's tomorrow. Hope everybody has a great afternoon.